Welcome on in, everybody, to the Locked On Eagles podcast, the February 4th, 2 years to the day removed from the Philadelphia Eagles winning Super Bowl 52 edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. I am your host, as always, Gino Camilleri, joined by longtime, let's say, a contributor to the show here, Lars Lewis, one of our good friends. Hopefully he's going to be back around draft season, because I know you like to talk about it as much as Lou and I do. So how's it going, Lars?
Oh, it was, the draft show was fantastic, and I'm definitely excited for the next draft. I know we just had Mock Draft Monday yesterday, and the mocks have been flying the last like 2 or 3 weeks, because once the off season, there's not really a whole ton to talk about, at least in this kind of dead period when the Super Bowl just ended. And then the period between then and the combine. So we got to find a way to keep our hands tied.
Yeah, man, that's exactly what it's going to be. And you're going to see a lot of these mock drafts coming about. And we talked about it a lot on Mock Draft Monday yesterday. But today we're going to get into a little bit of a changeup. We're going to revisit. I think it's fair to go back and visit the Super Bowl, and not the Eagles Super Bowl in particular, but the Super Bowl that just passed us versus the Chiefs and the Niners. And I think two teams that were at the top of their game this year, I think there are lessons that the Eagles can take away from both of those teams. And we're going to talk about what are some ideas philosophically that we would like to get out of watching San Francisco and Kansas City on both sides of the football. But before we get into that, we have a little bit of Eagles news today. And I think this is something that a lot of Eagles fans were interested to see what would happen and what exactly would shake out in this department. But the Philadelphia Eagles, according to Jeff McClain's from the Philadelphia Inquirer, said that the contracts of Director of High Performance Sean Hulls and Director of Rehabilitation Shireen Mansouri will both expire at the end of this year. So we look at this, these past two seasons, Lars, and you look at the department, and we were talking about some names before we got on the show, but I think rehabilitation and high performance are two things that this Eagles team definitely needs to improve upon, looking at the track record of injuries that they had the past 2 years.
Yeah, well, look at it. From 2013 to 2017, I know that McClain put this in his article, they ranked 1st, 5th, 6th, 4th, and 11th in the league in fewest games lost to injury, according to Football Outsiders. And in the last two seasons, in 2018 and 2019, as we've all experienced, it's just been one catastrophe after the other, and they have been at near the bottom of the league in man games lost in the NFL. And I'm pretty certain that change had to come about, considering that everybody and their mother was getting hurt last year, and the stinger from hell, as we all know, with Jordan Howard. It's a change had to be done.
I just think it created a lot of, I'd say, like, disparagement between Doug Peterson and the front office, you know, because he had to go out there so many times and talk about these injuries that he really didn't know much about. And you kind of felt bad for him, because it's not the days of Andy Reid when they would have the head trainer come out and he would point to the, he would bring the skeleton down the hallway and he would point to exactly what was going on with the injuries. There is no transparency in injuries. And I think there's a disconnect between the players and between the coaches and between the medical staff and what the expectations were. And guys have come out. I mean, Emmanuel Acho has been the front runner of saying that the Eagles medical staff is not a very good one. And we've seen that the last couple of years. And I've said it.
What's the debacle last year?
Exactly. I mean, you're looking at the biggest position and you can't even handle that the right way, which is looking at it from a business perspective and looking at your investments. When you're watching the stock market, you're not looking at the one stock that you have like two or three stocks in. You're looking at the one that you have 20 to 30 to 40 to 50,000 shares of, and that's what Carson Wentz is. And when you can't even get your quarterback ready to play and get him in a position where there isn't any sort of should he play, is he being pressured to play? And I know there was a lot of talk in all of these injuries when the expectation for them to come back was, and I just think that was unfair to a lot of these players. And getting them a guy or a new director at both of those positions, I think is going to be huge, because you need to change up something. There is a philosophical difference between everybody in that organization, and that was one of them. And I'm glad that this is the first step that they're taking to moving towards a better medical staff.
Well, it makes it all the more crazy. The last two seasons, they not only finished 9-7 in both years, they won the division this year. Mm-hmm. Considering all the injuries that they had, it truly is a testament to the players themselves of being able to step up when called upon. You look at Greg Ward Jr., you look mm-hmm. at Boston Scott, you look at Carson Wentz was healthy throughout this season. And unfortunately, with what happened in the playoffs, I mean, my God, man. Can Carson Wentz get a break at all? Okay, maybe bad choice of words. Anyway, it's a testament to Doug Peterson and the players on the practice squad this year for what they did to not only keep this team afloat, but make the playoffs. And hopefully with a new medical staff, they'll be a bit healthier, considering they're among the older teams in the NFL, and you need to rely on those guys a lot more, where players on this team have a lot more miles on their legs compared to some of the guys coming in throughout the last few draft classes.
Absolutely, and with 10 picks this year, that's going to be something that's going to be nice to see and going to be a breath of fresh air with the youth coming into this team. And that's exactly it, though. I mean, you see some of these guys on some of these teams that are playing well beyond their years, and they have good medical staffs, and you see them, and their bodies aren't breaking down as much. But when it comes to the Eagles, it just seems like everybody and their mother is playing with an injury. I mean, look it back to the Super Bowl season. I was just watching – I got through watching the run back of it right before we hopped on the show, and Alshon Jeffrey played in that game with a torn rotator cuff. Brandon Graham had to get surgery in that offseason. You had Big V in there at left tackle for Jason Peters. Like, they've just had bad stretches of injury, and the source has to be the medical staff. I mean, there is no reason that this many players shouldn't be able to get back from injury in a timely fashion. Look at Jalen Mills. I mean, he was on the IR forever, I felt. And just with a foot injury, and it's just, I didn't like the juju that was coming out of it. And finally,
Jordan Howard situation this year.
Yeah, I mean, you can list them on two hands easily, the amount of times they've messed up getting into these injuries. Yeah, exactly. But let's move on from that, because hopefully this is a change for a push in the right direction. We don't need to look into the past. I mean, it was a rough past the last 2 years. I said to Lou last offseason when we talked about things we didn't want to see return, I said I don't want to have to look at the Football Outsiders manual for 2020 and look at man games lost and them being 31st again, which they were last year. And you don't want to see that. Hopefully it is a change moving forward. Hopefully Murphy's Law is over with the Eagles in the injury department. Hopefully the law of averages will soon kick in. But there are some things that this team definitely needs to change. And we can look at the two teams that were in the Super Bowl, and we're going to look at some philosophical differences from what the Eagles stood on to what the Kansas City Chiefs and the Niners used to get to the big battle that happened this last Sunday. So join us on segment two of the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to the February 4th, not 2nd, sorry about that. I was talking to my roommate down in Mobile, who was from Mexico, and he was complaining how Americans write their calendar with the date first. Or the month first, and then the day.
Bill Murray's still living February 2nd after
Sunday.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I know. Punk's Tony Phil, we should be getting a quick spring here. But moving on, we are going to talk about the offensive side of the football in this last Sunday's game. Lars, what is one thing that when you were watching either team, you can start with either one you want to, when you were watching those two teams on offense, were you looking at saying, wow, the Eagles need to do something like that. They need to improve in this area. I like what they did in this area. Just give me one, and I'm going to play off of that, because I really think these two teams had some ideologies that the Eagles can really take from.
Well, I think I'll take the side of San Francisco, and you can take Kansas City. Does that sound good?
Yeah, good to me.
All right, I'll start with the Niners. When you look at Raheem Mostert, and you look at Kyle Shanahan, we all know Kyle Shanahan's philosophy of throwing the ball. But he kind of had to tailor his offense a bit this year because Jimmy Garoppolo, I would say, like, he's a good quarterback, but he's not to the level of what Matt Ryan was when Kyle Shanahan was the coordinator in Atlanta.
I think that's fair to say. Yeah.
So with that, you kind of had to lean a bit more on your run game this year. And the one thing that I really love that San Francisco does, which they didn't do in the fourth quarter again, the way Kyle Shanahan did against the Patriots, they kept throwing the football, giving Kansas City more chances. Because I actually give credit to Kansas City's defense. They were able to stop Mostert in the second half when they had their chances. Because with what San Francisco does, when you have Juszczyk at fullback, who not only can catch the ball, but he's an elite blocker. Mm-hmm. When you have an offensive line at San Francisco as strong as theirs is with McGlinchey and that group, you've got a guy in Mostert who's been on, what, seven teams in his career, but then he looks like a dynamo because with how they run their offense, they get their linemen, because they have a lot of speed for their big guys. They can get them to the outside. They love to run a counterplay to the left. They like to lead the blockers up the field so Mostert has a seam to hit. And the one thing I love about San Francisco is that they know how to implement a power run game, which not many teams are able to do in the NFL. And I like that concept where, let's say, for example, if Philadelphia is playing in December and it's a miserable day in Philly, there's a lot of rain, it's windy. This is the kind of philosophy you need to win those ugly games if you're playing if you're playing Dallas late in the season and you're playing a good defense. What San Francisco does with their run game is something I want to see this year, next year in Philadelphia. And I'm not saying I want it every week. I'm saying it depends on the situation. If it's lousy out there weather-wise, or if Wentz just isn't in rhythm in the first quarter, then I want to see him lean more into getting a power run game going.
I think they can lean a lot on Shanahan's play calling and how he designed a lot of those plays for the run. There was a lot of
is terrific.
Oh, it's fantastic. And you don't need a good run game to set up the play action. I mean, that's the myth that has been busted by Kansas City. But San Francisco, it's the meme of Thanos in Endgame when he has the knife balanced on his fingers and it's perfectly balanced. Like, he has a perfectly balanced run game to a perfectly balanced play action game, and they just ran it to a T. But I believe that the Eagles need to get more motion involved in their offense. If you look at the two teams offensively that were on the field Sunday, they both were the top two for motion used on plays going into the Super Bowl. And I mean, rightfully so.
Definitely up San Francisco when you have Deebo Samuel.
Oh, absolutely.
He's,
and I mean,
it's such a difference maker for that offense.
I think that's what I'm going to kind of play off of. And Deebo, you saw his speed and just his elusiveness and what he could do in the open field. And you wanted me to talk about Kansas City. And one thing, it's probably the most simple one to break it down to is speed on offense. I mean, look at Deebo Samuel. Look at Raheem Mostert. Look at Tevin Coleman and the type of player that he is. I mean, even look at George Kittle at that position. But then look at Kansas City and Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman. I mean, those guys can all just scoot down the field and excel in the open field. Who's the last guy the Eagles have had that could do that? I mean, Deshaun, when he's healthy.
A guy currently on the roster that didn't play much last year.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Ward can do that to a degree, but you really need a game-changing wide receiver that can do things in the open field, and they haven't had it in quite some time. And I fully believe this is the draft class that you can do that. And
absolutely.
Yeah, you drafted JJ to replace Alshon. Like, don't get me wrong, he can get down the field, but he's not the type of guy you need moving forward. Like, you now need to replace Nelson Agholor because he's gone. You now need to replace DeSean Jackson for the long term after he is gone after this year. Just draft more speed. That's what both of these teams had offensively that took them to the next level. Because you talk about this power run game, you're going to need to complement that power run game with runs to the outside. And how you do that is these misdirections. I mean, how many times could you see it last year on tape, Lars, when they would bring Nelson Agholor across the formation and you knew he was going to get it on a jet sweep? They just didn't have any creation in their playbook at all. It was just so
They didn't have a lot of push in their line either.
Yeah, no, not when they needed to. I would agree with you there. But, I mean, speed to the nth degree. Look, I think Deebo Samuel is the biggest proponent for that. And you need speed out of the slot. You need guys that can create action after they get the ball in their hands. I mean, even look at what Emmanuel Sanders did in that game, too. You just need speed, 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 speed. I mean, there's no other way around it in my perspective.
Pretty crazy how he can still get it done at his age, man. He still looks good.
Dude. They put together one heck of a roster. It is truly impressive.
I would not be shocked if, with the way the Niners offense is constructed, I still think in my mind their weakest link is Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to say.
Everybody on that offense, I think he is the weakest link out of all of them.
And to look back at the quarterbacks that have kind of struggled and kind of been like those quarterbacks that you can win with, he's that guy. Like, he's an Alex Smith. I mean, he's David Carr. Yeah, that's what he is. But I think they are definitely built on offense, at least, to compete for the long run. On defense, they got to pay a lot of those guys. But when you could churn outside zone backs like Raheem Mostert and Matt Breida and Tevin Coleman, they're going to have no problems.
Oh, absolutely, and I feel like that they're still the favorites in the NFC to win it again next year.
I'd be hard-pressed to find one.
Just because they probably have the deepest team out of everybody in the NFC.
Without a doubt. I mean, rightfully so. But if you move on from Garoppolo, you can now bring in a cheaper contract, arguably. I mean, it's something to talk about at least going into this offseason. But,
yeah,
I mean,
do you have 1 year left at Jimmy?
I believe they have an out on that contract this year. But
his first 2 years he was with San Francisco, he got hurt. This was his third season. So it'll be his fourth next year. Was it a 5-year contract?
Let's see here.
Because this is an intriguing argument. Because let's say if it was a 4-year contract and they have a 5th-year option, if you're the San Francisco 49ers, you have a big contract you have to sign on your defense, and Jimmy Garoppolo is a pretty hefty tag right now on your offense that you're going to have to spread around too. I'd be honest with you. I would be open to the idea if I was the 49ers to go and see what the draft class is at quarterback in 2021.
I don't think it's the worst hypothetical to talk about. And I think we can come back to this discussion in a few weeks because I'm going to be intrigued to talk about this. We'll put this on the docket for later down the line. We got to finish up this episode of the Locked On Eagles podcast. And as we get back to it on segment 3, we will talk about the defense and some takeaways that we would like to get from watching San Fran and Kansas City go at it this past week. All right, everybody, wrapping up the 2-year anniversary of the Eagles Super Bowl edition here on the February 4th edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, I am your host, Gino Camilleri, joined by longtime contributor of the show, Lars Lewis. And Lars, we talked about the offensive side of the football. Now we're moving to the defensive side of the football, which I think were kind of the opposite ends of two spectrums. I mean, Kansas City, there were a lot of question marks with their defense all season long. I mean, even in the playoffs, they got down early, but they have the magic of Pat Mahomes that can really cure all. But now you look at the San Fran defense, and one that was well-constructed, arguably with the most first-round picks on an offensive line ever. I mean, it has to be. But what are some things you look at these two teams and two very different defenses, but I think there are some takeaways on both sides of the ball that you can really say, hey, the Eagles should definitely look to go in this direction.
Well, having watched the Chiefs in the last two games playing San Francisco and Tennessee, I was actually very surprised with how well the run defense played.
Because, I agree.
I mean, Mostert got some good runs. And the same with Derrick Henry, but they kind of limited their impact in those two games. Where you looked at Tennessee, they got off to that lead, but second half, Kansas City buttoned up both their offenses, and they were able to buckle down. And I feel like with – it's going to be hard to say what the Eagles can do better, because I look at the Chiefs' defense, and it's very similar to Philly's defense, to where they're going to give up yards. Their secondary is not that good. Mm-hmm. But the difference is they – I do want Tyrann Mathieu. I think that's the one thing I want.
I'm glad you settled on that, because that's exactly what I was going to say. I want a safety.
Really the only thing I can think of.
I want a safety that you can know that if you leave him in single high or if you bring him down in the box, he can make plays all over the field. And he really was the catalyst for that defense. You said the secondary isn't that good. I mean, Kendall Fuller definitely wasn't up to the standard that he was last year by no stretch of the imagination. Tyrann Mathieu really was the quarterback of that defense for a long stretch, and I believe he should have been in the conversation for MVP of that game, if not MVP of the playoffs.
I would say so, and I got to give a lot of credit to Frank Clark and Nandi. Their front four actually was pretty impressive in the last 2 weeks. And I'd say throughout the playoffs itself, I mean, they wreaked havoc on Deshaun Watson against Houston in the second half. And it's I gotta give a lot of credit to Steve Spagnuolo, because absolutely, even though they were behind in the first halves of these games, the adjustments that they made were paramount, absolutely, them allowing their offenses to come back into the game.
I think that Spagnuolo is somebody that needs to get his recognition. And you look at I think you made a good point saying the Chiefs and the Eagles defenses are similar, but I think Spagnuolo just has that element that Schwartz doesn't, and he can make those adjustments. Exactly. Much, much faster and at a much more efficient rate than Jim could. And that seriously won him the game, man. I mean, look at the way the Niners were moving the ball early on. They were just moving it down the field with ease. Garoppolo was having one of his better games of the season. And then he just started to fall off. Spagnuolo started to send pressure. He realized that Jimmy G couldn't get the ball out. He was sending pressure from everywhere. He was changing up his coverages. And, man, it was a fantastic performance from Spagnuolo down the stretch there. He definitely has to get the credit. I thank you for saying his name, Lars, because he's somebody that through this entire process I don't think got the credit he deserved.
Yeah, I think he's one of the more underappreciated defensive coordinators that the league has had in a while. I mean, despite a head coach, his regular season record's not that good. It's actually pretty abysmal. But you look at the situation he inherited in St. Louis, he made that team at least competitive when he was coaching there. And you look at his work in Baltimore, he was a senior defensive assistant, secondary assistant, 2013 and 2014. It was really the last years that Baltimore had some success before they kind of fell off a bit and they had to retool their roster. And with the Giants, defensive coordinator from 15 to 17, for Spagnuolo, he needs to have the players that fit his mold. And I feel like when Kansas City got Tyrann Mathieu, I think in previous teams, he never had that kind of safety to where he can say, look, I can use the single high coverage. I can let him go one-on-one, and I'd be able to use more of my front four to get more pressure. And the way he made the adjustments in the second half of games throughout the playoffs this year, I think has been a very underlying aspect as to why Kansas City won the Super Bowl.
Definitely, and you flip to the other team and you look at Robert Saleh and what he did there, and hats off to him. I
man,
mean,
he's elite, man, no question.
He's never, I'm sorry to rub this in, but he's never going to be the best Saleh in the world, because we know Mo Saleh at Liverpool. I know you're a much hated Liverpool fan,
different
being
subject,
an Everton guy.
Moving on.
I hate Liverpool as well, my friend, I know. But every time I hear the name, I think of Mo Saleh and their stupid Liverpool song. That's a topic for another day. But, Robert Saleh, man.
Mo Saleh, I have a lot of respect for. He's a hell of a player.
And you got to respect Robert Saleh as well, man. He took a group that just a few years ago under Chip Kelly had one of the worst defenses in quite some time. He goes out there. I mean, he did get a few the help of a few first-round draft picks and Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner and Solomon Thomas and Bosa. But hey, man, they got it done, and that team leaned on that defense for so long. And I think this Niners team really took the path of what happened to the Buffalo Bills at the end of the season there, and those elite defenses, just when they needed to hang on for one more quarter and lean on their offenses just one time throughout the season, they couldn't get it done. And I don't think you can blame San Francisco's defense in the slightest for how this game went.
No, they held off Kansas City long enough to where they feel like they should have had a chance to win. And I feel like Kyle Shanahan bungled it. The defense started to get tired. Kansas City was starting to find their form in the second half like they did all playoffs. And for Saleh, with how he runs that defense, when you have Bosa, when you have just some absolute beasts on that front four, it was one of the rarest occasions that I saw this year where all of the years that Kansas City has built that offensive line, it was really one of the first times I saw all season where San Francisco was kind of getting knocked backwards on a few plays, especially on it was when they made that switch on fourth down, that spin.
Oh yeah. Yep.
That it was like an old school play from the 40s that they ran. That was one of the first times I've ever seen the defensive line for San Francisco this year get knocked on their butts.
Yeah, I mean, even to being as a dominant of unit as they were, I still think Andy Reid outcoached them. I mean, offense versus defense, I think that's what it came down to in the fourth quarter. But I'm not going to put the blame on them. But in total, just to have that dominant front, it's something that I want the Eagles to continue to invest in, because the theory of having too many defensive linemen is just false. It's like having too many guys in the bullpen during an MLB playoffs. It's just that they don't correlate. Like, you can never have too many interior rushers or edge rushers. You can never have too many guys in the middle relief or the late relief for the MLB. You just continue to add there. And the Niners showed that you need that late in the season when guys go down. You need those that rotational unit that is dominant, because if the Eagles team could play with Malik Jackson and Fletcher Cox 100% healthy next year, you're going to be talking about one of the best defenses in the league.
Oh, they're going to be frightening. And even with that, as you mentioned with the Eagles, with Jim Schwartz, they've always had a great run defense. And when you've got those two guys in the front, that's never going to be a problem. And I don't think there's any shame in getting out coached by Andy Reid in terms of scheme. Clock management, a whole other thing. But in terms of scheme, there's really no shame, because Andy Reid is the true mastermind of offense in this league. And I don't care what any of the Sean McVay apologists say. Andy Reid has ran this league for 20 years. He turned Brett Favre into an MVP of the NFL three straight times. Nobody is better when it comes to coaching offense in the past 30 seasons than I think Andy Reid.
Yeah, and we'll end it on that. And I'm just going to leave it with this. You see what Andy Reid did, and I'm glad you brought him up again, Lars, because he has been the ultimate culmination of adapt or die, and he has now done it going on three decades. I mean, just to think about how many coaches have lasted that long. He's in the top 10 for sure, if not top 5 in some arguments. I mean, he should have won more Super Bowls with that early 2000 Eagles team, but hey, finally Big Red got one. The Eagles got one 2 years ago today. I'm still believing that it's a dream, Lars. I still wake up and can't even fathom the fact that the Eagles won one 2 years ago.
Yeah, it makes me very happy knowing the fact that not only the Eagles have one, Big Red's finally got one.
Absolutely.
Hey, why not Big Red against the Birds next year?
I'll take it. That'd be a heck of a matchup. But for now, thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, as always, Gino Camilleri. Thank you, Lars, for joining us. You guys can always find us on Twitter. You know where to find us. We're not going to keep saying it. If you've listened this long, you're going to continue to keep listening. Fingers crossed, hopefully. But thank you guys for all your continued support. We're going to have a couple more shows this week, many more shows going into this offseason as we approach the draft season. So thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And fly, Eagles, fly.
You got it.